This is the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. It's almost 1 o'clock. It's about 5 minutes to 1 o'clock. You're listening to WAIF in Cincinnati, Ohio. I'm Chris.
And I'm Rob.
And together we have on the telephone Dr. Chris McKay. He works for the Ames Research Center at NASA.
Dr. McKay, thanks for coming on the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show.
My pleasure.
Now, your big project is you want to put life on Mars.
Well, I first want to see if there was ever life there.
How would you find out if there was ever life there?
Well, look for fossils, same way we do on Earth.
Now, have you got any indication that there may very well be life on Mars at one point in time?
Well, we see evidence that there was water. We see dry river channels that indicate that there was water and lots of water flowing all over the surface. And if you look at Earth, where there's life, where there's water, there's a possibility for life. So that water is the smoking gun, or the dripping gun, if you will, that there might have been life at one time.
Now, they've got obviously polar ice caps on Mars. Where do you think the rest of the water went?
Well, the rest of the water is probably tied up in permafrost in the polar region, just like a lot of water on Earth is tied up in permafrost.
Don't they have clouds and thunderstorms and stuff like that on Mars?
Clouds, but no thunderstorms.
Well, what's the weather like up there?
Well, it's cold, very cold. But that's not the real problem. In fact, in some places, Mars can get quite pleasant. Temperatures up around 70 Fahrenheit. The real problem with Mars, and the reason you have to bring a spacesuit when you go, is the pressure is so low. The pressure is as low as it would be if you were 20 miles high on Earth.
So what's that mean?
That means that the pressure is so low that literally liquids, water and blood and all this kind of liquids that we're normally used to just won't exist as a liquid, and they'll start boiling spontaneously.
Ugh.
Sort of the thing that happens when you go out in the vacuum of space. That's
right.
What happened on Mars, and that's fundamentally why you need a spacesuit. That's why there's no liquid water. No liquid water, no life. But we see evidence that there was liquid water. We see these channels. So we think that there might have been water, or there definitely was water. There might have been life. We want to search for the fossils. If Mars had life once, why not again?
What kind of life do you think it had?
Well, if you compare it to Earth, and you say, well, Earth and Mars had water early in their history, and you look at what kind of life Earth had when Mars had water, you find that it just had microscopic life, algae, blue-green algae, the kind of green slime you find in your back, in the puddles in your backyard.
So you're saying there was never anything on Mars like monsters or Martians or aliens, just like a bunch of slime?
Yeah. If you look at, say, the dinosaurs, you say, well, that was long, long ago, but that was only 100 million years ago. On Mars, the water was there 3 billion years ago. So the dinosaurs were just yesterday compared to the time frame we're talking about. You look at Earth, that time frame, there was life, but it was microscopic.
Now, what about this monument on Mars? They got a big face or something, and maybe you've heard about that. A guy named Richard Hoagland really pushes that.
Sure, there's certainly a face on Mars. I think it's cute. I think it's the best face. I've looked at all the faces on Earth, like the old man on the mountain in New Hampshire, and I don't think any of them come close to looking as good as the face on Mars.
Who do you think it is?
Well, I just think it's a bunch of rocks. I mean, we all agree it's a face. You look at it, any two-year-old can tell it's a face. But then what does that mean? It can mean two things. It can mean just a bunch of rocks that look like a face, or it can mean cosmic implications for aliens that have a penchant for carving rocks into human-like faces. I think the principle of least astonishment would argue that the former, it's just a pile of rocks that looks like a face, and it's very cute, and it'll be a major tourist attraction, I hope, when we eventually go to Mars. But I don't think it has any profound meaning.
How long do you think it'll be before a human being sets foot on the planet Mars?
Well, the current plan, NASA's official plan right now is 2018, the year 2018. So that's, about 30 years from now. Now, I personally think it's going to take a little longer. I think it's going to be a tough challenge.
Because governmental red tape.
Well, I don't think the red tape is the biggest problem. I think it's just hard to get there. Rockets are slow. It takes 6 months to get to Mars. And you can't just come back when you want. You have to wait for Earth and Mars to line up again. It's a difficult problem with technology we have.
Well, when are we going to start inventing stuff like they got in Star Trek and we can just zip there in the blink of an eye?
That's my question, too. I go to the engineers and say, look, I really want to get to Mars in 10 days and I want to do it for $100 million so it doesn't take an act of Congress to get us there. But they haven't quite got that technology working yet.
Now, where on Earth is the terrain most like Mars?
Well, the place on Earth that's the most like Mars is the Antarctic. There's places in the Antarctic which are the coldest, driest places on Earth.
And but don't they have snow and permafrost there,
no,
too?
There's no snow there. It's completely dry. We go there every year to study the life that's found there as a Mars analog. And you're walking on the surface there, it's completely dry. If you were just looking at it visually, you'd think you were out of a desert, the Gobi Desert or some harsh desert. But yet when you feel it, the temperature, the average temperature is minus 20 centigrade. So it's very cold, very dry.
So you're studying, what do you find in, exist in the Antarctic besides penguins?
Well, in the Antarctic we find two, when you just stand on the surface it looks dead.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely dead. It looks dead at least. But you find that there's life hidden in two places. One, underneath the surface of certain rocks. I've got some of them here in my office, in fact, from the Antarctic. And under these rocks on the surface, they look like regular brown sandstone rocks. But just underneath the surface of the rocks, inside the pore spaces, there's lichen growing. Normally, you go in the mountains and you find lichen growing on top of rocks.
Mm-hmm.
In the Antarctic, it's so cold and so dry that they're going inside the rock, literally using the rock as like a little greenhouse, growing inside the rock. And the other place we find the life is underneath ice. Find these thick blankets of ice, 15 feet thick, but there's water under the ice, literally lakes underneath this blanket of ice. And in those, in that water under the ice, again, we find algae, microscopic life forms. These algae, we think, are the kind of organisms that can survive when it's gotten so cold that everybody else is dead. And so we think that the last Martian was like these things we find in the Antarctic. And so we go to the Antarctic and see how they're living and how they're dying and how they're fossilized. And the idea is we'll go to Mars and look in the same sort of locations.
Now, you know, we're big into the stars, you know, that kind of thing. And so we were really looking forward to the pictures from the Mars Observer.
Yeah, me
when
too.
All of a sudden, it decides, well, there will be no pictures from the Mars Observer, and they lose contact with it. Now, not that we're raving paranoids like a lot of people who study the stars are, but what's up with that, and do you think the government actually lost contact with the Mars Observer, or do you think the Mars Observer sent back pictures which proved that there had been life on Mars, and they said, you know, we cannot let this information get out to John Q. Sixpack?
Right. I'm flattered by the second hypothesis, because it presupposes that NASA is so well organized that all of us that study Mars would be able to keep a secret, and that none of us would spill these incredibly interesting pictures that would absolutely be sensational. You could write a book and write your ticket in terms of being the first one to publish these results, but yet somehow we're so well organized that we've kept that secret.
It's because you guys all drink the same water, and you don't know what's in that water there.
Interesting. It would get out so fast you wouldn't even see the backside of it.
So how close are you to Carl Sagan?
How close am I? I know him professionally. He works in the same field, but I don't know him personally.
And is he really the ringleader of your cadre?
No, not at all. He's not even a NASA employee. I'm a government employee, so if there's a conspiracy, I guess by definition, I'd have to be part of it.
I know, but since he's not an employee, he gets off scot-free.
Right, but we'd have to keep him in the dark, you see. If this was a NASA conspiracy, he's much too prone to just telling people things.
Hey, be frank. Come on, Chris. Just say like it is. Sagan will do anything for a buck. He'll say anything for a buck. He'll go anywhere for a buck. And he'll do any kind of dog and pony show for a buck.
Oh, no. It's the opposite. He'll do anything to get publicity and get the word out. And so if he knew about these pictures, he'd be on Johnny Carson's show telling the world about how fascinating it was.
Well, what does Carl Sagan think about the face on Mars?
Well, I think he thinks like I think it's just a pile of rocks. I think the unfortunate truth about Mars Observer, and I call it the bummer of the century, is that it blew up, unfortunately. They had a rocket there, a valve,
uh-huh.
that had been leaking during the trip, and when they went to fire the rocket associated with that valve in the fuel tank, it ignited that vapor, and the thing just blew itself to smithereens.
Well, since we're on the right track here, let's really get into some good science fiction. What is terraforming, and can we do it to Mars?
Well, the idea of terraforming is if you look at Mars, you see these channels. There was water. There was life on Mars sometime. It's dead now. Well, let's do CPR. Let's bring it back to life.
Now, how are you going to do that? That's a big place.
Well, that's a good question. You say, well, if you look at it, you say, what do you need to do to warm Mars? Well, what you need to do, but to bring it back to life, you need to warm it. Well, we know how to warm planets. We're doing it on Earth, where it's not a good idea, probably. But on Mars, calculations would show that if you do exactly what we're doing on Earth, in terms of putting out these super greenhouse gases, nitrous oxide, methane.
So you want to go up there and send a bunch of, cans of Right Guard and just spray them all the time?
Essentially. You have to be a little more elegant than that. In fact, you can't launch enough of them there to do the job. But if you were there, went to Mars and made them there, you could warm up the planet by putting in these CFCs. In fact, it turns out that that's the only planetary scale technology that we've mastered. The only thing we can do to a planet is warm it up.
All we can do to a planet is put a big hole in the ozone.
Well, Mars doesn't have an ozone, so we don't have to worry about putting a hole in
it. So we want to put up some kind of factory on Mars that produces 73 Cadillacs with leaky air conditioners.
Well, not exactly, but you've got the right idea. We probably, the better solution would be not so much factories, but organisms that make it. In other words, have microorganisms in
it. So you want to send up a bunch of methane producers like cattle?
Yeah, they'd be a little tinier. Microscopic methane producers, methanogenic bacteria, nitrous oxide producing bacteria, ammonia producing bacteria, and even bacteria that produce CFCs. It's not right now on Earth, of course, we get them from factories, but organisms can metabolize these compounds as well.
But this brings up the obvious question of if Mars lost most of its atmosphere once, what can you do to keep it around in the future?
Well, that's a good question, and it is true that if we were to bring back Mars to life, it would go down the same path it went initially, and it would freeze over again. And our estimates are that would take about 10 million years. Well, I figure if you spread the mortgage payments out over 10 million years, that's okay. I mean, that's a short time compared to the history of a planet, but on human time scales, that's an enormous time.
Yeah, and in 10 million years, we probably would have that Star Trek technology where we could just beam aboard and go on up to...
Right. Somebody else will have a good idea for how to fix the problem after 10 million years. So we're not making it good forevermore like Earth, but we're making it good for, say, on the order of 10 million years. And if you just contemplate how long 10 million years is, that's an enormous time on a human time scale.
Isn't this an awful big project just to grow some moss?
Well, it depends on how attached you are to moss. I happen to think that moss on a planet is a very profound thing. And, on Earth, Earth, as far as we know, is the only planet that's got life on it. Despite all the evidence of aliens or whatever, we have no direct evidence of life anywhere else outside Earth. Here's a chance to take a little bit of that life and plant it somewhere else. So that now we have, in some sense, we have two gardens, two worlds. I think that's amazing and profound, and it doesn't actually take that much effort. It's like planting anything. You only put a seed down, and then you let nature take its course. So on Mars, what you do is you'd warm it up a little bit. Maybe on timescales of 100 years or so, you'd warm it up enough that it would have a thick CO2 atmosphere, water again. Then you plant a few seeds. You may tend the garden a little bit, but it doesn't require enormous effort. It's not like you're doing heavy construction on the whole planet or something like that.
In case you just tuned in, we're talking to Christopher McKay, Dr. Christopher McKay, at NASA Ames Research Center about the planet Mars.
Now, did you see the show on television last night? I didn't see it, but somebody did. Where they cut open a space alien?
Yeah, it's been all over the email, internet. I didn't see it, but a guy at UC Davis, a sociologist, sent around a several-page critique of the show that basically said that he thought it was some poor human being that had gotten zapped by radiation. But either way, I don't think there's hard evidence.
Well, you need to tell that sociologist from UC Davis.
UC Davis, yeah.
That he really needs to get another hobby besides writing a multi-page paper on a Fox television show.
Yeah, I could agree.
He probably needs to start collecting butterflies or something.
It's bad enough that I actually scanned it as it came in. It was a slow day here.
So you work for NASA. What do you think the future is for NASA, and when are we going to put another man on the moon again?
Well, I hope we don't put another man on the moon for a long time. I think the future of NASA is to go directly to Mars. Go to Mars, do not stop at the moon, do not waste
millions of dollars. Well, wouldn't the moon be a really good launching pad?
No, it's not on the way. You go straight to Mars. Maybe a space station will be useful on the way, but it's unlikely that a lunar base is. There's nothing on the moon. Why would you stop there for? It's not like a gas station. People talk about, well, you can get oxygen from rocks on the moon. Well, it's a lot easier to get oxygen on Earth, or you can even get oxygen on Mars. You can make it from the CO2 in the atmosphere, which is a lot easier than making it out of rocks. I think the numbers just don't support this contention that going to the moon is the first step to go to Mars. I think it's like Napoleon said, if you want to take Vienna, go for Vienna. If you want to go to Mars, go for Mars.
Now, how far beneath the surface of Mars would one find the rocks warm enough to have liquid water?
Well, currently, Mars is pretty cold. The mean average temperature is minus 60 centigrade, which is about minus 80 Fahrenheit. So that's really cold. To get deep enough that you're at temperatures that are above freezing, you need to go a couple kilometers under the ground. So it's really cold. It's much too cold for life. But really, the first challenge is to warm it up a bit.
Well, anything else you'd like to add?
No, just that it's a fascinating planet, and I hope that I live to see the first returns of humans on Mars.
I hope so, too.
Yeah.
Who do you think is going to win the World Series?
Martians.
Boy, you really play this one up, don't you?
How's Dion doing out in Frisco?
I didn't even know there was a World Series. I don't even know who's playing.
Dion plays for Frisco now.
I didn't even know Frisco. Oh, for San Francisco. We have a team. That's right. What are they?
They're called the Giants.
The Giants.
Do you have any questions you'd like to ask a couple of young, hip talk show hosts from Cincinnati while you got us on the phone? We've been asking you questions all night.
Yeah, I do have a question, in fact. It's a very important question. Around here at NASA, there's a lot of discussion that when we send the spacecraft to Mars to bring a piece of rock back, which will happen probably before humans go, we'll have a sample return. A robotic sample return. No humans, just go to Mars, scoop up some dirt, and bring it back. Okay, well, around here, a lot of people think, well, if we do that, the public is going to freak out. They're going to be worried that we're bringing back Martian AIDS or something, and it's going to infect the planet, we'll all die, Andromeda strain type syndrome. And I say to them, well, I don't think so. I think we're going to be totally underwhelmed by the interest of the public in a sample return.
Well, you guys quarantine all that stuff first anyway, don't you?
Well, we would, yeah. Yep.
Just like you did the astronauts when they came back from the moon.
Only it'd be a lot easier because they won't be yelling that they want to get out. So we put the rocks in quarantine. But there's people think that it's going to generate an enormous backlash of public opinion against bringing a sample back, and that people are going to panic in the streets.
No, that's not right. You guys got the wrong impression out there in NASA. The American people are some level-headed individuals, and they know that a rock's a rock.
Well, what's the dirt made out of up there?
Well, we know from Viking that the mineral analysis is somewhat comparable to sandy desert soils here on Earth. A lot of iron oxide, maybe some clay minerals, whatnot. And we don't think there's any life there, but we can't say for sure there's not. And when we bring a sample back, our attitude toward the sample would be to assume that it is dangerous and treat it that way. But the people's notion is that there'll be the same sort of reaction that people have against, say, genetic engineering, release of genetic engineering organisms, or launch of radioactive material. NASA's having a real problem with that right now, launching radioactive plutonium inside generators, electrical generators. There's a big backlash against it. And people say, well, the same thing will happen to what happened to the genetic engineering folks when they tried to release genetic engineering folks, organisms, when we try to bring dirt back. And I say, well, I don't think so. Genetic engineering is a different thing. It's much more closer to home, so to speak.
You know, I talked to a 90-year-old woman today, and she told me the reason that the weather is so screwed up anymore is because of all these things we have floating around in space, because the Russians have, like, a whole city up there, and we have, like, a whole village, and we no telling what kinds of stuff we got shooting around up in the heavens. That's why the weather down here is so screwy. Was she onto something, or she just cracked?
Well, I don't think so. And I thought the weather was screwy, too, but then, you know, I heard on the radio that there was 12 hurricanes this year, but there was 12 hurricanes in 1933, too. Well, in 1933, there wasn't any Russians with cities floating in space, so the weather's just been screwy. I think that's just the way the weather is.
So it's not really global warming, is it?
No, well, we don't have direct evidence of global warming, but I think it's definitely on its way. You can't pump all this stuff in the atmosphere without it warming eventually.
Well, about that Mars dirt thing, I don't think you got anything to worry about. I think it's exciting enough that enough people will be on your side. But if you want to, we'll take a survey on our talk show and find out what Ma and Pa Sixpack around Cincinnati think.
Yeah, that'd be good.
We'll do that, and we'll send you the results back, and you can certify them NASA.
Right, exactly.
Make us junior astronauts, too.
Yep, you see, the problem is when NASA does surveys, it tends to talk to people who are space cadets, and they know all the answers. You know, they're into it. And so it's not really a general survey of the public.
Well, we talk to a lot of space cadets, too.
Right. You probably reach a broader cross-section of the population, though, than we do in our sort of closed shop here.
Okay, well, we'll let you get back to watching the Giants game.
Yeah, that's what I was doing.
All
the
right.
Giants again?
Oh, okay. Thanks a lot, Dr. McKay.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
Pleasure. Bye.
Inch by inch, row by row, gonna make this garden grow. Gonna mulch it deep and low, gonna make it fertile ground. inch by inch, row by row. Please bless these seeds I sow. Please keep them safe below till the rains come tumbling down. Pulling weeds, picking stones, we are made of dreams and bones. Need a spot to call my own, for the time is close at hand. Grain for grain, sun and rain, find my way in nature's chain. Tune my body and my brain to the music of the land. Inch by inch, row by row, gonna make this garden grow. Gonna mulch it deep and low, gonna make it fertile ground. Inch by inch, row by row, please bless these seeds I sow. Please keep them safe below till the rains come tumbling down. Plant your rose short or long, season with a cheerful song. Mother Earth will make you strong if you give her loving care. Old crow watching from a tree, got his hungry eye on me. In my garden I'm as free as that feathered thief up there. Inch by inch, row by row, gonna make this garden grow. Gonna mulch it deep and low, gonna make it fertile ground. Inch by inch, row by row, please bless these seeds I sow. Please keep them safe below till the rain come tumbling down.
We're back. This is the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show, and I'm Chris.
And I'm Rob.
And together, we're the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. The phone number is 749-1444. That's the phone number here.
We have a very special guest in the studio.
Yeah, we have the Spotted Owl himself, Al Ringshauser, is here in the studio with the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show, and he's got something for us.
Yes, as the secretary to the Board of Trustees for WAIF-FM, I wish to present something to you that I came across this past week while going through the paperwork for this upcoming membership meeting coming up here in September. So I'd like to present this to you. Go ahead and read it on the air, and I'm sure you will enjoy it. Thank you. And I'm sure I'm sorry for giving this to you so late, since that's from October.
Quit reading it, Chris, and do it live on the air.
Okay, Al just presented me with a letter, a handwritten letter, sent to the board of WAIF, and it's framed.
It's in a frame.
And it says, to WAIF, sorry about the lack of signature on the check. Here's the amended version. Make sure the mug that you send me is personally autographed by Chris and Rob in permanent ink. After all, they are the second and third greatest radio personalities in the Midwest. Wave forever from Rob Calvert at the 550 Bar and Grill Talk Radio 550 WCKY. Make sure you tune into his show if he ever gets it off the ground again.
And he just called a little while ago.
Yeah, he sure did. Well, thanks, Rob, for the amended check. And we're going to... You got the mug?
What the hell? Rob forgot to sign his check?
Where's the mug?
I don't have a mug.
Rob I'll forgot to sign his check.
Get a mug and we'll sign it.
Okay, no problem.
Rob forgot to sign his check.
Well, thanks. You framed it.
Sure.
Hang it on the wall somewhere.
This is yours.
All right.
Hang it on the wall. Somebody will steal it if we hang it in here.
It's yours.
Well, thanks.
It's your letter.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Al.
Thank you, Al.
We love the Board of Trustees around here at the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. In fact, we wouldn't even be the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show if it wasn't for the Board of Trustees. And if you'd like to have a say in who the Board of Trustees at WAIF are, then come down and cast votes for Chris and Rob. No, really. Come to the programmers' meeting.
The annual membership meeting and potluck dinner will be Sunday, September 24th, 1995. If you send in a pledge within the past year, you will be receiving a postcard, probably in the mail. You can bring the postcard and a photo identification to our membership meeting. Now, this is for the third year in a row. This membership meeting will be held at St. Anthony of Padua, one of my favorite saints. St. Anthony of Padua Church, which is right across the street, 2524 Victory Parkway. Registration will begin at 2:30. The meeting will begin promptly at 3. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Guaranteed.
Promptly, uh-huh.
Guaranteed.
Uh-huh. It is your station, so make the commitment to see that your community radio is run properly and efficiently. P.S. Bring a cover dish, a salad, or a dessert.
This is the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show, and we'd like to thank the Board of Trustees for framing this letter for us. Make sure you get us the mug, and we'll send Rob Calvert his signed mug. Bring the mug down next week, and we'll sign it.
Sure will. Sure
okay,
will.
And Jim, bring a permanent ink marker, okay? Okay.
Also known as a Sharpie.
We'd like to thank Jim for answering the phones tonight. Where would we be without Jim?
Jim was the one that thought of the question for Dr. McKay about how long would the atmosphere disappear on Mars, and you know what he said? He said, that's a good question. So kudos to Jim for thinking up a good question.
Now, if you live in Kentucky, the Boone County Arts Council meets at 7 p.m. on the last Monday of every month at the Gathering House in Florence Nature Park. If you can keep track of that, the Boone County Arts Council, 7 p.m. the last Monday of every month, and that's coming up at the Gathering House in Florence Nature Park. For more information, you can call 371-5491. That's 371-5491.
You know, this music doesn't have the usual cheese quality that the classic Chris and Rob music does.
What kind of music do you want?
How about something with a lot of piano in it? Something with a lot of hard-driving piano in it. Something maybe a little southern.
Why did you mention we're going
to
talk to this guy?
We're going to talk to Ben Folds. He of the soon-to-be-famous Ben Dukes. Ben Folds 5. This is little Ben Folds right here, WAIF.
Stop the bus. I want to be lonely. When seconds pass slowly and years go flying by. You got to stop the bus. You get off here. And that's enough. And I'm leaving this factory.
Whoa.
That's Jackson Cannery by the Ben Fold 5, a new album out on the Passenger record label. And we have Ben Fold from the Ben Fold 5 on the telephone. Hello, Ben.
Hey.
How's it going?
It's going well. How's it going with you?
We're doing a late night talk show, so it's going okay. We just got done talking to an astronaut and a drug guru and a guy who explores...
An astrogeophysicist and biologist.
Did you get all that?
Yeah, you hear hermaphrodites?
Yeah, now we're talking to a piano player.
Cool.
So, Passenger Records, what kind of a label is that?
It's basically Caroline Records, really.
Caroline Records puts out a lot of grunge music. I didn't think they did anything with piano in it.
Yeah, well, they covered this one up and just wrote Passenger on it instead.
Okay, change the name of the label and they can put out whatever they want. Then maybe the next record on the label will be reggae or something.
Yeah, just probably be trumpet records.
Okay, so you're a piano player.
Yes.
And your band is called the Ben Folds Five, and there's three of you. You got Robert Sledge playing the bass, and Darren Jesse playing the drums.
Right.
And Ben Folds, that's you playing the piano.
Yeah.
There's three of you, and the band is called Ben Folds Five.
I know, we just figured that out. That sucks.
Yeah, what's up with that? How'd that happen?
False advertising.
I guess. Who are the other two guys?
Sue me. Well, there was never two other guys. We wanted to, you know, we thought that Ben Folds 3, and it didn't sound good. It didn't have the fricatives in it, you know.
It didn't have panache.
Yeah, it didn't sound cool. This said Ben Folds 5, like C5O. It just had more of a sound to it, you know.
Still beats the Max Weinberg 7, if you ask me.
Yeah, so it doesn't flow very
well. So this new record is self-titled. It's called Ben Folds 5. How long has it been out?
3 weeks now.
Oh, is that all?
Yeah.
Oh, man, I must be on to this pretty fresh.
How's
it been selling?
I think it's been selling pretty well. I don't know. I haven't seen exact figures on it. I know that they've reordered up to, I think, 16,000 as of last week. So I think that for you know, being, you know, a little unknown band from Chapel Hill, that's pretty good so far.
We just played a song called Jackson Cannery.
Yeah.
Did you work there?
No, but a friend of mine worked at Haynes Hosiery. Which is, you know, basically...
I bet that came in handy for his girlfriend.
Yeah. Drilling really come in handy for anything, actually. I think it paid that well either, but Jackson Cannery was kind of a fictional place, but it's based on Haynes Hosiery.
When are you going to hit the road?
We've been hitting the road. I'm home for a week, but we're going back out with Heather Nova. We just got off the road with Better Than Ezra. And we'll be out with Heather for a month.
Better Than Ezra's in town tonight.
Yeah, good.
And you're not there.
We're not there. We dropped off in in Iowa City. But I think the Dam Builders are with them still.
Yeah, the Dam Builders.
When are you guys going to play in the Queen City of the Midwest, as dubbed by Mark Twain, Cincinnati, Ohio?
Cincinnati. Well, that's not on the Heather schedule, but I'm sure we'll get there before the end of the year. One hit there in Cleveland too.
Now everybody else drags along an electronic keyboard, but you drag along a baby grand.
Yeah.
Now what is that? And most people who play piano actually make the hall provide the piano.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, we figured out how to move a piano, and it's a baby grand, and you know, figured out how to get it amplified, and it's actually a pretty major feat in and of itself. And now, you know, we play six band night at crappy clubs and the whole nine yards. Anything a guitar band can do, we try to get in those situations, and it's a lot.
Now, you guys aren't one of those keyboard trio bands that just has a vendetta against guitar players, are you?
No, we try. You know, we admire the guitar.
I'm telling you right now, it didn't work for Keith Emerson. Those guys just suck.
We don't want to do a bunch of brainy music like that. I think, really, I love guitar, and we just couldn't find a place for it because me and Robert play so busy, and we filled it up, and the guitar players didn't work, so we just left it at piano, bass, and drums, and he plays through a lot of, you know, big muff distortion, and I break a lot of strings, and it kind of seems to get a similar effect.
So who gets to move the piano to all the gigs?
That's me and the guys. I mean, mostly me and my friend Trey, who comes along with kind of tour manages.
Is it a collapsible piano or something?
Yeah, I mean, no more than any other. I mean, most pianos are a little more portable than you might think. you knock the legs off of and put it on its side and you roll it in. And, you know, the club people always ask the same, well, does it stay in tune? And have you ever heard of a digital keyboard? But
those digital keyboards just don't sound right, do they?
No, they suck, man. I hate those things. I tried a couple of times using that, but you know, people usually use those if it's working out. The other sounds are equally as cheesy, and it all balances out. Or they've got a guitar player to cover up the sound. But for us, it's all real, and the piano has got to do all the work. So the electric keyboards, they just don't happen.
What kind of piano do you use?
It's a Baldwin.
Do you have some sort of endorsement deal with Baldwin?
Yeah, yeah.
You do?
Yeah, we just got a little endorsement with Baldwin. So
free pianos?
Well,
so you can set them on fire like Jerry Lee Lewis?
they'll give me parts anyway.
They'll give you free strings.
Yeah, I get strings and hammers, which come in handy because they just break a lot.
What's that piano weigh?
Oh God, maybe 800 pounds. Something like that. Almost, more than my girlfriend.
Has it ever gotten out of control when you're trying to wheel it around somewhere? Ah, runaway piano. You ever had to chase it down?
It fell on my little brother one time.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Is he okay?
Yeah, he's okay. I was kind of worried for myself. Mom was kind of pissed.
So you drop an 800-pound piano on your brother, and the first thing you think about is, oh, damn, Mom's going to kill
me?
Isn't
that the way it is with your little brother, though? I mean, that's always, that's it's like me and him were climbing up the dresser drawers when we were like 2 and 4 years old, and we pulled the whole thing down on ourselves, and I got out from under, and I ran away because I thought I was going to get in trouble for pulling it on my brother.
So you just left him there covered with underwear and socks.
Yeah, but actually, he was fine, though. People who haven't had a lot of experience with moving the piano have a hard time listening to the order get out of the way.
Right.
It started falling, and he thought he could catch it, and it was a real slow fall. It was a real non-event. He just kind of went, and then he was kind of under it, and we got it off.
Well, it was in slow motion to him, I bet.
Like $6 million man or something.
Yeah, he'll never do that again.
So what's Chapel Hill all about? You got a million bands on independent labels coming out of Chapel Hill. Half of them are good, half of them stink. What's the scene like down there?
I think it's real creative. I think there's a lot of really cool stuff down here. My personal favorites are, I like the Archers of Loaf a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And Squirrel Nut Zippers are great. Super Chunk. There's a Zen Frisbee. I don't know if you've heard of them. It's a fantastic band.
Not familiar with Zen Frisbee.
Zen Frisbee is great, but I don't know whether they really care to get out of town or not. But
do they have a band in Chapel Hill called Big Hunk of Cheese?
Called what?
Big Hunk of Cheese.
Big Hunk of Cheese. I don't think so.
Those guys.
Summer. Any band called Big Hunk of Cheese in Chapel Hill?
This is Ben Folds.
Don't think so.
Don't think so.
No.
So when are you going to have another record coming out? They always say you have your lifetime to write your first record, but you have 3 months to write your second.
Yeah. I'm not going to have a lot of time for. Well, but I've written a lot of songs. I'm ready for the next record.
Are you going to put more lush orchestration on it?
Yeah, that's something I want to do more of. I'll probably ease into that because I'm sure that just. The budget and time will dictate when I deserve to have an entire orchestra.
Okay, well, we're going to play the next song that I told you off the air we were going to play, so why don't you introduce it and say the name of your band again and everything. Plug yourself.
Ladies and gentlemen. How's this? Okay, I'll start with the ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Ben Folds 5 from Chapel Hill and Underground.
On WAIF.
On WAIF with Chris and Rob.
I was never cool in school. I'm sure you don't remember me.
And now it's been 10 years. I'm still wondering who to be.
And I'd love to mix in circles, cliques, and social coteries.
That's me.
Hand me my nose ring.
Can we be happy?
Show me the mosh pit.
Can we be happy?
We can be happy.
Underground. Who's got the looks? Who's got the brains? Who's got everything?
I got this pain in my heart, that's all. goodbye. She gave a smile, but I was shy, and I looked down, so down.
The Ben Folds 5 with a song called Underground from the debut album. Thanks for tuning in. This is the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. I'm Chris.
And I'm Rob. HIV testing and counseling is free and anonymous. It's available weekdays at 3101 Burnett Avenue. Hours vary, so call 357-7350.
Nobody can understand those letters when you read them like that.
You told me to do them fast, or you said I did them too slow last time, so I did them fast, and now I'm doing them too fast. No one can please you, dude. No one can please you. They try and try and try. They break their back
well,
to you,
Well, if I'm
man.
Sitting at home and I was really interested in what you just said and I was going to jot down that number, I wouldn't have gotten it.
357-7350.
And that's for what again? Because I forgot.
HIV testing.
Okay, good. What's next?
We're going to take a call from Dale.
Hi, Dale. Welcome to tonight's program.
Hey, what's going on?
Welcome to our world, Dale.
Hey, Dale, I got some good news.
Good news.
This is real good news. This is going to... Well, we know what it's going to do to you. You want to hear?
Yeah.
Farrah Fawcett might be in Playboy's Christmas issue.
Yeah, you know, I read about that somewhere.
How about that?
Yeah, 48 years
old. Man.
Yeah, she's 48, but she's still a babe.
Oh, yeah.
Totally.
I'm going to have to purchase that issue.
Yeah. So, Dale, you called us. What's on your mind tonight?
Man, I was listening to some of that space stuff y'all was talking about, you know, about going to other planets and, you know, should we, mess with life on other planets or even try and start life on other planets?
Yeah, we talked to a guy a little while ago who was talking about trying to go to Mars.
Yeah. First of all, I mean, I think it would be pretty stupid of us to feel that out of this large galaxy and millions of galaxies that's probably out there, that we're the only planet with life on it.
The other planets, except for the ones in our solar system, are so far away that it would take hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands of years to get to them, even at the technology we haven't even invented yet. But
yeah.
Mars is close enough we might be able to get to it.
Yeah, I understand that, but I just feel like this, you know, we're destroying this planet as it is. I just feel that we should take the resources and the money that we put towards trying to go somewhere else and try and fix what's wrong with this planet first before we go on to another planet and probably destroy it. You know, instead of looking for an scapegoat, I just feel like we should clean, you know, and clean up our act a little bit here and learn how to deal with our problems here instead of always trying to reach somewhere else to find out if it's a suitable planet enough where people can go and live just in case, you know, this planet goes down the tubes.
I can understand you saying that, Dale, but I've always felt that traditionally two of the responsibilities of government were funding arts and funding science. And I would like to see the current United States government continue those two traditions. I would like to see them continue to fund arts, and I would like to see them continue to fund science. We must keep exploring. We must keep pushing the envelope.
Well, it's the exploratory nature in all human beings, Dale.
I'm not saying it's a human characteristic and instinct for us to want to know more and to strive to know more, but all I'm saying is that we could put that same ingenuity toward finding ways to make this planet last longer. This planet may never live, or we may never live long enough to reach that goal. If, you know, we keep destroying the planet at the rate that we're doing it right now, we may never live long enough to acquire that technology. So all I'm saying is kind of ease off on that right now until we find out how we can save our forest and the air and you know, the water and everything like that that we need to survive on to tomorrow. But if we're putting all this money into getting this space and trying to get to other planets and stuff now, and our planet is, you know, slowly but surely being dilapidated, you know, hey, you know, we may never live long enough to reach the technology to get to these planets.
Well, I understand what you're saying, but if you want to start taking a little look-see at the federal government, there are a plethora of other programs that are worth less than the NASA program that you could say, well, I'd rather see them cut this and give the money to saving the Earth than NASA. I mean, if it was time we really needed some money for the projects you're talking about, where we got to cut it out, I mean, that NASA, I think, is way down on the list as far as I'm concerned. There are a lot of other programs and wasteful things that go on. We could cut those out and use that money for the things you're proposing.
And I would agree with that. I would agree with that. If we could find, you know, like cut out some of these other things that maybe aren't as important, like a lot of these plants and stuff that they start to set up and then they never finish and they just let them sit there, you know, and it's like millions of dollars just sitting there, you know, stuff like that. Yeah, I would agree with that. But I'm just saying in general, I don't care what they have to cut or whatever. If we can find and get everything straight here, I would be all for, you know, trying to find life on another planet or trying to find another suitable planet to live on or whatever. I would be all for it. All I'm saying is that whatever program there is out there, I just feel like the money should be spent towards, you know, trying to secure and save this planet first.
Okay, we got one more question for you, Dale, then we got to let you go.
What's that?
Do you believe there's actually a bear prowling around Xavier University the other day?
I doubt it. You know, it could be a practical joke. It could have been a bear. You know, it could have been a big dog. You know,
it could have been a possum.
I doubt a possum be mistaken for a bear, but there are some big dogs out there.
There are some big possums, too. Have you been looking around the neighborhoods lately?
Those possums that eat the fish out of Mill Creek, those things get big.
They sure do.
Yeah, really.
All right, Dave, we're going to let you fly.
All right, man.
Later.
749-1444 is the phone number. This is the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. And if you have seen the bear that's been roaming around North Avondale or Norwood over the weekend, give us a call.
You know, the Wave Studios are not that far from bear country. We are not that far away from the Xavier University.
Well, could be. Hello, Charlie. You're on the air.
Hey.
You're kind of wild. Hi, Charlie.
Yeah.
Welcome to the program. Have you seen the bear lately?
No, I saw that on the news, though.
Did it frighten you? Did you want to form a posse and go hunt the critter?
No.
Did you want to go tame it like Gentle Ben or Grizzly Adams?
No.
Did you want to get out? You know, yeah, we should get that traffic guy to shoot it. Yeah, we should get you know, that one guy flying around a helicopter shooting a little bitty groundhogs. Now let's see if Macho Man can take out a bear.
Are you talking about air traffic control from John Phillips at the big one?
Yeah. He can go shoot up groundhogs. He can move up to the big game.
If anybody's going to catch that bear, it would be that John Phillips character.
Right.
Charlie, what's on your mind tonight? You called us.
I just wanted to check in, let you know I'm alive.
That's great.
Yeah. I haven't called since May.
Why not?
We had a better time slot. We have a more Charlie-friendly time slot now.
I know. I haven't called since May because...
Speak up, Charlie!
I haven't called because I've been working.
Where do you work at?
Don Pablo's.
Oh, that's nice.
Which one?
The one in Coleraine.
Oh. Do you think that their Mexican food is legit, or do you think it's just a bunch of crap?
They make everything from scratch.
Do they really?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Answer the question.
What?
Is it real Mexican, though, or is it Coleraine Mexican?
It's Mexican. I don't know.
Now, if you're going to open an American restaurant in Mexico, what would you serve?
Burgers.
Burgers? Anything else?
That says something about our culture, doesn't it?
Right.
They'd have a TV with a baseball game on it. Maybe a basketball game.
No wrestling. Big time wrestling. They'd have it like a tape loop of Jim Neighbors playing. Because you know you go to a Mexican restaurant, they always play that cheesy Mexican music. They never play like authentic Mexican folk songs or anything. They always play,
I have
like,
to put up with that all day.
So that Mexican place you work at, Charlie?
Yeah.
Does anybody who works there speak Spanish?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. That must be the real thing then.
I went to Taco Bell once, and I ordered something like, yeah, give me two burritos with no queso.
There's a Taco Bell right beside Don Pablo's.
Really?
I find that sad.
Do you go there?
Yes.
Chris and Rob Stanoche.
Right.
Right. Do you speak Spanish, Charlie?
Stanoche.
I took a couple years, but I don't remember anything.
Can you say, I love to listen to the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show every Tuesday night at midnight on WAIF?
Tonight.
In Spanish?
That's too much.
You're no good then. Thanks for calling, Charlie.
All right.
How do you say late? How do you say late?
We don't know. This is the Chris and Rob Late Night
Lego.
English Talk
later,
Show.
Right?
This is the English version.
Lego means see you later.
This is the English translation of the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. We'll be here for another 14 minutes.
Is muy bueno. Yeah, I'd like three tortillas, no frijoles.
Huh?
Frijoles. Hi, Steve.
Hello.
Steve, where are you calling from?
Post office.
How are things at the old post office?
Not too good,
out,
I'd imagine.
Yeah.
You work for the post office?
Yes, I do.
I heard you guys aren't even allowed to joke about shooting each other.
No, we're not.
So we will drop it right now.
Okay.
Why are you calling us?
I do it all the time.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Steve, don't make us report you.
Yeah.
What's
the
last...
names, but somebody's sister's real bad about that.
Really?
Threatens me.
What's the best joke you ever heard at the post office about shooting another postal person?
What's it mean when the flag's at half-mast?
What's that mean?
Positions available.
All right, enough of that. Why'd you call us, Steve, at the post office?
I must admit, I was astounded by a couple of the admissions of your scientists from NASA.
Which were what?
Number one, it is very unlikely that there's life anywhere else in the world.
In the world?
In the universe.
Why is that?
Just because that's obviously true, and most scientists don't like to admit that.
Well, how can you make such a blanket statement that it is obviously true?
Because I've studied it, as apparently he has. The possibility of life, the odds are just, I can't think of a word, and I'm not... It's a pun, but astronomical.
Wait. Let's back up just a little bit,
sir.
Steve. Where do you get your facts? And what have you studied?
Physics, astronomy.
You've studied physics and astronomy, and
you
don't believe...
Well, I've talked to experts in the field.
Now, do you have a religious vendetta about this?
Partially.
Okay, if you do, that's all right.
I think scientists have an anti-religious vendetta.
I don't think that they do.
And that's why I'm surprised by his admission.
Are you an evolutionist or a creationist, or do you believe that both could live in harmony side by side?
I don't believe both can live in harmony.
You do not?
No.
What's your denomination then?
Christian, Church of Christ.
The Church of Christ?
Yes.
Is that one of those right-wing fascist churches, or is it a pretty nice church?
I don't know.
What's he supposed to say?
Pretty
yeah,
nice.
I'm a right-wing fascist.
Well, a lot of people are right-wing fascists, and they're proud of it.
No, I'm not proud of being that, but I probably am. No, I'm a libertarian.
A libertarian is cool.
You know what? It's funny. People think, like, when you're young, to be a Republican, you're a nerd, but to be a libertarian is cool, and it's like, there's not that much difference.
Okay, so let's get back to this scientific thing. What's your vendetta against scientists?
They look for evidence to support their anti-religious vendettas. And I was just surprised. There was a refreshing admission on his part that life anywhere else in the universe is unlikely, and it is. It doesn't mean it can't be there.
I just think
but,
sometimes...
You know, a lot of them... We spend a lot of money. Oh, there goes my boss.
Oh, damn it.
Anyway, she got nice legs, I might add. A lot of people know who I meant now.
Which post office you working at?
Maine.
Where's that at?
One on Dalton Street.
Downtown.
Whoa.
So,
you guys have you seen any flyers up or anything there in the post office about our show?
No, but a lot of people listen.
Really?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Because I do, and your sister talks you up.
Oh, well, good for her then.
Well, there, you said something positive. I'll tell her that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe she's listening.
Well, thanks for calling, and tell all your mailman and mail lady friends to keep tuning in, and I won't sick my dog on you next time you come in my yard.
The one other admission he made, by the way, there is no concrete evidence of global warming. A refreshing admission on his part. And
why? Is there concrete evidence of it?
No. And I was surprised he admitted it.
Well, I mean, is that
because,
you say he admits?
If scientists keep saying it is, they get a lot more money to study it and all that.
Well, you say admitted it like he's a kid who broke the window and he's like now admitting that he did it.
Well, most scientists won't admit to facts that kind of harm their
Well, do you think that this guy was lying when he was talking about the NASA cover-up of the photographs discovering life on Mars?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I have personal evidence of that alien on ice in Wright-Patterson.
You do?
I don't know. He was joking along with you, so.
What's your evidence?
I don't know. I read it in the Enquirer.
Yeah, okay. That don't count.
Did you watch the Fox show last night when they cut the alien open?
Oh, man, I missed it.
You know what came out? 6 dog collars, and one of them was like a homing dog collar.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That's great.
That's sick.
Yes.
Okay, thanks for calling,
All
Steve.
Right. Bye.
Lighter.
What is this world coming to?
749-1444. I think some scientists do have a certain air of smugness about them. They act like we are now at the apex of scientific knowledge, which of course we are, because as time marches on, we accumulate more scientific knowledge. But they also act like now we have absolute certain knowledge about some matters. When 200 years ago, when they were bleeding people, they also believed back then that they had absolute certain knowledge about the
other things.
Well,
I am a scientist, and I don't think you ordinary common folk can meet the high criteria that it takes to be my intellect.
Yeah, exactly like that. You don't even know what that means.
Michael, you're on the air.
Hey, what's up?
You're calling from Latonia.
Yep.
How are things down there in the Bluegrass State?
Muggy.
Julie Crone got married.
Who?
Julie Crone.
Who's that?
The winningest woman jockey ever.
Okay.
What's on your mind, Michael?
Last night, that show on Fox, I obviously missed it. What did they show?
I missed it, too.
We've just had people calling in talking about it. People have been calling in talking about a show that was on Fox last night that they showed footage that was shot back in the 1940s of some Army scientists cutting open an alien body, like from outer space. But I didn't see it. Rob didn't see it. Our studio audience didn't see it. Nobody saw it except for some guy that called from Clifton. I think he's high. I think he's stoned.
No, I heard him talking about it on other radio programs this day.
Oh, did you?
Yes.
So it wasn't just that guy from Clifton?
No. It was mass hysteria.
That's everything I know, Michael.
I think the scientific curiosity was like at an all-time high back then around World War II.
They were trying to build a bomb to decimate Europe and Japan. Of course the scientists were all pegged out.
Like all the Nazi war type...
Those guys were trying to build the bomb first.
Please?
Those guys were trying to build the bomb first. The Germans were working at it, we were working at it, and so were the Japanese.
Hey, how come, now that the German scientist who designed the V-2 rocket, Wernher von Braun... How many British people did he kill with his V-2? Thousands.
Yeah.
Probably thousands.
Way too many.
Bring him to America, welcome him with open arms, him and his other Nazi colleagues that destroyed London. But if there was a guy who was like an enlisted person at a death camp somewhere, we want to put that guy on trial. We want to make him pay for war crimes, rightfully. But these scientists, we brought them over here and kissed their butt, set them up, gave them great grants, and let them go to work for us. So if you were a scientist, you could be a hideous killer of innocent people.
A butcher.
But if you weren't a scientist, well, then you get put on trial. So I think we should have put them all on trial. Wernher von Braun should have been hung a long time ago.
He's probably one of the few people that helped us get to the moon.
Yes, he is. And without him, we probably still wouldn't be there. He was a genius. He was a mad genius, but he's a genius nonetheless, I tell you.
Thanks
I read
for your
that the, getting to the moon was all a hoax.
We were in Arizona, dude. You know that.
Thanks, Michael.
Thank you.
749-1444. We can take one more call.
Yeah, what are the chances that a bunch of...
What do we got up next? The old school flavor or what?
Yeah.
Is that what we got the old school flavor up next? Right now, the old school flavor is throwing back one of them tropical punch-flavored drinks, and he's enjoying it.
Congratulations, you've won a free prize.
I have?
Or so the saying goes. Check out the offer with the BBB, Better Business Bureau. And remember, if you have to pay money to receive a prize, it isn't, quote, free, unquote. For more info, 421-3015. 421-3015.
Got that? 421-3015 for the Better Business Bureau.
Hey, Drew.
Hey.
Hi, Drew. What's on your mind tonight?
I saw that alien thing.
What happened?
All I know is they bleeped out the alien's penis.
Did they really?
Yeah.
Ugh.
That's
you think
all they did.
You think if an alien came down from outer space, he'd actually have the same genitalia as human beings?
See, that's the thing. I don't know.
Did he look like Michael Jackson?
No, he was a little guy, but they had his penis bleeped out.
What do you mean?
Well,
what,
if whatever he had.
Electronically altered?
Yeah.
Did they have like a white or a black box over it, or did they just have
no,
it all fuzzy looking like on 60 Minutes?
It was distorted.
Was it?
Yeah. It was pretty insane.
Well, I don't know what to make out of that, Drew.
Yeah.
Sounds like a conspiracy to me.
Yeah, I think it was pretty much fake, but...
Well, we'll look into it and we'll deliver a full report, all right, Drew?
All right.
So stay tuned.
Enjoy German music straight from Deutschland.
Achtung, baby.
Speaking of Wernher von Braun and his murderous scum type.
Nicht.
Nicht.
Nein.
Nicht. His nicht.
Braunschweigen.
Oh, my God. Have you heard that commercial Bob Braun does? For Bob Braun Braunschweiger, it's the best Braunschweiger. Have you heard that yet?
Perfect Nugent.
Have you heard that yet?
No,
the
Braun- I haven't.
Oh, man, he sells Braunschweiger. And he says the word Braunschweiger about 20 times in a 60-second commercial. And I laugh so hard every time. What? It doesn't have the bite that other Braunschweigers have, but it's packed with great flavor. It's my favorite Braunschweiger. Enjoy German music straight from Deutschland with your host, Hans Krosky, every Wednesday evening from 5 until 8 p.m. Whether it's polka or modern, you'll hear it on German Tunes of the Queen City. Another fine program presented by Stepchild Radio, WAIF FM.
And you know what WAIF stands for, don't you?
What?
Wow, ain't I funky? And we got the old
Not
school
yet.
Flavor coming up next, and he's going to funk you until 5 o'clock.
That was a great show. I listened to that show for like 2 hours last week. It was great. And I went to bed about 4. This is Chris Robb saying thanks to everybody. Later.